Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil,
pasa Maidan, le pido a Aubameyang. ¡Gol del Arsenal! ¡Sí, Aubameyang! ¡Qué picante que está Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang!
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, hello to you. Goodly afternoon.
Goodly afternoon. Hmm. Mixing it up. How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm tired because we normally record in the morning around 9 or 10 in the morning. So I've been up, I've been out with the dogs, I've had some coffee, maybe more coffees than I actually need. But now it's about half one, just after half past one. I've had my lunch. And I'm kind of feeling like, oh, I could do it just, you know, lying down. You know, like when a lion devours a gazelle on the plains of Africa, and he goes and he sits under a big tree and has a scratch, does a bit of a roar, and then just sleeps for 17 hours. I kind of feel like that, although I did not have gazelle for lunch.
Like when a snake swallows a horse or something. And it just has to lie there digesting it. Yeah. The acids slowly corroding the body.
Yeah.
So it can then move on with its life.
It's a bit like that, except, again, I did not consume a horse at lunchtime.
No. Right. So. What did you have?
Cheeseburger.
Still, I mean, there you go. That explains, I think, your feeling. There's a heaviness to a cheeseburger.
There is, with bacon as well. And actually this delicious Scotch bonnet ketchup. Really spicy.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. So I am feeling a little bit on the tired side this afternoon, but hopefully some engaging conversation with you and questions from our listeners will perk me right up.
I don't doubt it. You've peaked too soon today. Did Arsenal peak too soon in their pre-season preparations after the dispiriting secret 3-2 defeat to Aston Villa at the Emirates Stadium?
I think it's fair to say they did. I didn't see any of it. Not a single second of it. We didn't get a report beyond the bare necessities. But I think it's fair to say that it's pretty much all going wrong for Mikel Arteta now. He's going to have to watch himself.
No, it is weird. I mean, when we played these kind of behind closed doors friendlies just before Project Restart, we saw highlights and stuff, didn't we?
Yeah.
But obviously there were no highlights in our performance against Aston Villa.
Well, I mean, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang scored two goals again. He's the only one scoring goals right now.
I predict he will score probably greater than 90% of our goals in the next calendar year or so.
Are you saying we're becoming a bit of a one-man team when it comes to goal scoring? Surely not.
I know. Yeah. I know. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. I mean, some players were away, weren't they, on international duty?
Yeah. Granit Xhaka wasn't there. He did a mad pass last night. Did you see the video? That was mad.
Well, it was his first game as the official Switzerland captain, having at long last inherited the armband from another former Arsenal hero, Stefan Lichtsteiner. And he obviously wanted to mark the occasion in spectacular style. And he did it with this. I mean, I've not really seen a pass quite like it.
It's the technique is unusual. It's fair to say.
It's the technique of a man with no right foot, I guess, who's learned to use the left foot improvisationally in almost every circumstance.
I think that would be reasonable. If I hadn't watched the compilation of Granit Xhaka versus Germany, which somebody put together as a 2.5-minute compilation of everything Granit Xhaka did against Germany, and his right foot was very much in action.
Really?
Yeah, I have to tell you that he had a shot from distance, which Bernd Leno tipped over the bar. There were a couple of really good passes with his right foot, one in particular where he had the ball in central midfield and he just sprayed it out out to the left-hand side where you might imagine an Aubameyang would be, tearing down that outside channel, looking to come inside with his right foot. You know, so there were moments when his right foot was very much in action. I just think it was maybe his body shape as much as anything. But it was sort of like, it reminded me of the guy from The Simpsons, Mr. McGregor, with a leg for an arm and an arm for a leg. It was like he would kick a ball in those circumstances.
It was. He really sort of swipes at it and catches it off the outside of his boot. I mean, it's worth checking out. It's on Twitter somewhere. Granit Xhaka having a shot against Bernd Leno with his right foot. That feels like a pre-match bet between teammates. I bet you I'll score against you with my right boot. Leno wasn't having that.
No, I think he had a few whacks actually on goal. He had two or three shots from distance, and Leno had to make saves every time. So, you know, maybe Xhaka has been, I don't know, reinvigorated, or more greatly invigorated than he was before. Maybe he was just vigorated, and now he's invigorated ahead of a new season with Arsenal. Is he playing again? I don't know that they're playing again, Switzerland, before the... Is he coming back? Like, that's what I mean. I'm just going to have to check it out. I know there was an Arsenal.com story. So you say something interesting here while I go back and look and see what fixtures he has.
I'm just trying to think of who else was involved in internationals. I mean, Eddie Nketiah captained England under-21s while Xhaka was captaining the senior Switzerland team and scored a hat-trick, I believe.
Reece Nelson game also scored.
In which Reece Nelson also scored. Very good performance from Max Ahrens, young right-back in that game. But yeah, Nketiah was, you know, in typical predatory fashion. I mean, he is in that kind of awkward spot where he's sort of too good for like under-21, under-23 football, but not quite making a massive impact at senior football, you know? He's in that transition period.
Yeah. Well, look, a good hat-trick for him and a good goal for Reece Nelson. Bukayo Saka also played. Daniel Ballard made his debut for Northern Ireland.
Yes,
so congratulations
correct.
To him. I've just looked it up here. Of course, Granit Xhaka has been called up to the Switzerland squad for their games against Ukraine on Thursday, September 3rd. Somehow that passed me by. Don't know how that happened. And Germany on Sunday, September 6th. So he'll be on his way back to London now, which is good, you know, to get him reintegrated and in training ahead of the weekend's game. Say Kolasinac, I think, was involved for Bosnia. He's playing for Bosnia maybe tonight. Or tomorrow night. And Matteo Guendouzi is going to captain France under-21s against Azerbaijan. The comeback starts here.
Yes. Well, I mean, interesting, isn't it, that it would make him captain on that team? It doesn't really tally with the personality, maybe, that we have seen, and or certainly, you know, that Arteta seems to have seen recently at Arsenal. But I think it's probably a good thing, you know, in terms of the market and trying to make him seem like a more attractive prospect. France under-21 captain, it sounds like a thing.
It does, and I'm sure all the major scouts will be in attendance in Azerbaijan this week.
They'll be watching the Azerbaijanis. Do you know what I mean? They want to keep a close eye on those guys. But, I haven't really seen much international football. Arsenal women played yesterday. The women are back.
Yeah, with a bang. It has to be said. What that goal from Vivian Miedema, holy shit. I love a goal that goes in off the underside of the crossbar, though. I am an absolute sucker for that kind of a goal.
Yeah. It's a cracker of a goal and a really good performance. But, I mean, the 23s game remains a mystery. Aston Villa's title challenge starts here.
Well, look, we should mention before we move on from this that Ainsley Maitland-Niles is away with England also, and they're playing Denmark in Copenhagen tomorrow
Hopefully
night.
Alone in his hotel room.
Yes. Well, I mean, that might well increase his chances of getting a game.
Very possibly. I mean, yeah, it's... I looked at the bench at the weekend and it's sort of, because it's the Nations League, it's only three subs. And I think, I don't know. But you never know. He might play the second match. He'll be involved in some capacity.
Yeah, he could make his England debut. So that's what's going on from an international perspective. Oh, Kieran Tierney, of course, is playing tonight as well against the Czech Republic. So fingers crossed he comes through that one unscathed. Yeah, I mean, that's it, really, in terms of internationals. What do you make? I mean, some people have I've said that in the three or the two sort of behind closed doors friendly games that we've played, one against Queen's Park Rangers, one against Aston Villa, should we be worried that we have conceded three goals in each of those games? I mean, is Mikel Arteta, is this why it's happening behind closed doors? Mikel Arteta practicing or putting in place a new 1-5-5 formation or 1-5-4, something like that?
I mean, I don't know. We only conceded one against Liverpool, and they're the best team in the country. So maybe he has been trying something out that's a little bit tactically different. Mm. It's really, really hard to say. I don't know much more about these games than the rest of you, really. Tempted as I was to kind of climb, scale the Emirates Stadium and sort of watch with binoculars from the roof, we all know that would be much too dangerous for someone like me. So it didn't happen.
Yeah, it could only happen if you were singing the national anthem before the game, though, like that lady who did it for the FA Cup, remember? To ensure social distancing. What is the best way to ensure social distancing from national anthem singing lady whose name I can't remember now? What's
her
name?
Did you by any chance see any of Soccer Aid last night? The celebrity ex-pro football match?
No, because, you know, I'd rather rip out my own eyes with a pair of rusty spoons than watch something like that. So, but I feel like you're going to tell me something interesting happened in it, and I may have to revise my opinion.
On the subject of sort of live music performances at football matches.
Right.
Robbie Williams appeared at the stadium to perform as, like, CGI. Hang on.
No, you're not. So, did he appear or did he not? Was he a hologram? Was he CGI?
It was him, but he was on a green screen in his house, and they made it look like he was at the stadium performing for social distancing reasons.
It seems quite complicated. Why didn't they just fucking put him on the roof like they did with the lady?
Maybe
who did the...
Robbie Williams is scared of heights. That's the only possible conclusion here.
Let's see. Is Robbie Williams... Well, when you Google that, the first thing you get is Robbie Williams dead? So I think we can say that he's probably not dead.
Maybe he is, and that's why they're projecting in images. It's a conspiracy.
Robbie Williams is dead. And that's
why
he
was murdered by his fellow Take That
Gary
band members.
Gary fucking Barlow.
Barlow killed him in a fit of jealousy after his initial solo success. And since then, we've been watching hologram projection of Robbie Williams.
Mm.
What happens if you do Google, is Robbie Williams dead?
Well, you Google it. I've got the
I started Googling, is Robbie? Before that, you get, is Robbie Coltrane dead? Comes up as a suggested thing. No. Actually, it's a bit depressing because it just tells you that Robin Williams is dead.
Oh, no.
No one needs to be reminded of that.
Yeah. Is Robbie Williams scared of heights? No. Apparently, he says he's in constant fear of meltdown. He's living in fear of being attacked. Which is pretty grim. And then he couldn't get off his sofa for 3 years because he's battled agoraphobia. So,
oh, well, maybe that's what's going on.
Yeah. So there you go. But
I feel bad for taking the mickey out of him in a way.
Well, look, it's not like you put him on the roof of a stadium and made him sing while he was shitting himself that he was going to fall off. You know?
That's true.
Who else is involved in this Soccer Aid business? Any Arsenal connection at all, or...?
I'm trying to think. Well, I know that Colin Lewin, and I think maybe Gary Lewin as well, they were the physios, which I think is quite a full-on job because a lot of these people are not in the best of shape anymore,
right,
particularly the celebrities. John Terry played.
I'm even less interested in it now than I did before.
Trying to think. I don't think there was much Arsenal involvement. If any. But I wasn't really watching it, to be honest, Andrew. I just sort of turned on at half time and was like, why is there a fake Robbie Williams live in the stadium? And I had to look more into it.
Okay, well, there you go.
But I mean, quite Arsenal, I mean, we're playing I don't know. What is it? 5 days?
5 days, yeah. The season starts on Saturday. So, you know, this week is going to build up, but we've been in this kind of strange, you know, interlull period / post-Community Shield. I mean, everybody just had a post-Community Shield hangover, didn't they? The celebrations, you know, that reverberated around the world, not just in North London, but everywhere. I think people really had a good time with that, you know. So it's obvious there was going to be a bit of an anticlimactic period after that. But, you know, let's go back and talk a little bit about something that did happen. Danny Ceballos is back on loan. Officially, he signed last Friday night. So that was a nice time for an announcement.
And played on the Saturday.
Yeah, because the story was that because he was coming from Spain and it's a bit of a COVID hotspot, was going to have to be in quarantine in kind of the same way we assumed that Gabriel was when he arrived, and then they did the socially distanced welcome video. You know, he wasn't even allowed over to Kia Dravchin's house to sit on the sofa with Willian and the piles of money that they have over there. But, you know, it was a bit of a surprise to see him, but apparently it comes because he was part of what's called an elite sports organization, which is Real Madrid.
I see.
Like, professional sports teams have this exemption where, you know, because they are in these elite sports things. Actually, I had an email from somebody, and I should read it out here because it was quite interesting.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think it was sort of an assumption, wasn't it, that he'd have to go into quarantine, I think, which is fair enough. I mean, that's sort of the rules, but he does have this exemption. Whether or not that's right, I don't know enough about, you know, the science or the testing to say, really.
Yeah, well, I got an email from somebody. I'm not sure if I can say his name or if he's allowed to reveal this information, so I won't actually say his name, but thanks to him for getting in touch anyway. And he said, I work for the Mercedes Formula One team, currently writing this to you from the track in Monza. And the way it works in Formula One is that we're getting tested every 4 or 5 days generally, and then you have to have a test 24 hours prior to flying home. And as long as the test is negative, you can return to the UK accompanied by an elite sports letter that's guaranteed or granted by the government, which means you don't have to quarantine. So that's the situation with Danny Ceballos. So he's obviously got that letter, which means he doesn't have to quarantine.
I think it's really good news to get him back. And the fact that he could go in and play on the Saturday, albeit in a friendly game straight away, I think shows the value. You know, in a season where pre-season's so short, where you don't have much time to tweak things, to help people settle, to have a guy who already knows the team, already knows what Arteta wants to do, has those relationships, to parachute straight in, I think it's ideal, to be honest.
Yeah, it is. And obviously midfield is still an area of focus, I think, for people who are interested in transfers. And no doubt we'll have a question or two about that as the show goes on. That rule, by the way, is also in place for the players who go away on international duty.
Yeah,
And they stay.
We get them back.
Yeah, apparently they stay within their international bubble, even though all the players are coming from different parts of the world and through different airports and meeting with different people and mingling and all that kind of stuff. Even though there's all that going on, they've got a letter because they're in a bubble and they're allowed to return home. But I do feel like it feels inevitable to me, and I could be wrong here, and I hope I am, but it feels slightly inevitable to me that an Arsenal player is going to test positive for COVID-19 at some point. I think Man City have announced that, is it Riyad Mahrez and somebody else? Emerick Laporte have tested positive. So they're going to be missing for the start of the season for them. You know, I know we've had our run-in with COVID, with Mikel Arteta and everything else, but it just feels like sooner or later one of our guys is going to get it. And we'll probably have licked a few of the other players in training or something like that.
Well, I think, you know, Arteta was spoken about very publicly, but in a lot of player cases or other staff cases, there's patient confidentiality, right? So Arsenal I don't think we're obliged to make it public.
Ooh.
You know, if players did contract it. I mean, who knows? Maybe there's quite a high level of antibodies in the Arsenal squad. Well, it wouldn't surprise me.
Are you saying that maybe they did already?
I don't know.
Okay, sorry. You're just speculating.
I'm just
wildly
hypothesizing.
Right. Okay. Fine. That's
that. If the manager had it, and he was working at the training ground, and there were other people at the training ground, it's very possible other people might have had it. They might not even have had any symptoms. But yeah, who knows? I mean, it feels like something that would happen to us, right?
Yeah. For sure. Like on Friday, Arsenal announced that everybody has got COVID-19.
Yeah. The training ground has been burnt to the ground after it was found to be infected.
They've salted the earth.
Yeah.
Nothing shall ever grow there again.
That does feel inevitable. But,
well, look, fingers
hopefully
crossed.
Not.
Hopefully not.
I mean,
hopefully
that's
not
the weird thing about the rule, right? Like, obviously, these elite athletes are exempt. But, you know, they're still getting it. Footballers are still getting it.
They're exempt, but not immune.
They're not immune.
Yeah. Just because you got a fucking letter, mate, doesn't mean you're immune.
We've got a special Premier League vaccine that they've all had.
Yeah.
yeah, I do feel like the cracks in that will probably start to show as winter sets in, but let's not get too depressing about that.
No, let's not. Transfer news, there hasn't been a great deal since last week, obviously. Some links with Socrates and Lucas Torreira to Italy, but beyond that, not a great deal. I did see a report over the weekend from RMC in France. I'm not quite sure the provenance of it beyond that or the reliability of it, but it was sort of one of those. Remember years ago when you'd read stuff in the newspaper and it would just sort of drop like what seemed to be a fairly big piece of news right at the end of a story about blah, blah, blah. Yeah. There'd be this big, long story, and then it would be like, meanwhile, Arsenal have had a £78 million bid for Roberto Baggio turned down by Juventus. And it would just be that. And you get these weird snippets in the newspaper. So this was one of those where it just sort of had a big, long list of transfer stuff. And it said, and with regard to Lyon have had a bid of £35 million plus a player from Arsenal, but they turned it down. And that's right. It. They didn't say any more. Like, more. Like, which player? We need to know which player.
So I spoke to someone in France about this, another journalist, and they were saying that...
Oh, that's good. I'm glad it was a journalist and not just Jean-Pierre that you rang up out of the phone book.
And they said that... Jean-Pierre said... I've really lost track with this. He took off his beret and he said to me, between munching on his baguette, he said, that's a reference to a previous bid that was made weeks ago
included
Matteo Guendouzi. But it's just a sort of callback, essentially, to this did happen.
Right.
So I feel like it was one of those where we were like, what about Guendouzi plus this bag of potatoes, essentially? And obviously it's not panned out. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one.
Awar.
Because, you know, the names that are being talked about... I mean, we had a question about this. Maybe we should do the question.
Yeah, do.
The names that are being talked about for the midfield are Awar and Thomas Partey, as far as I can tell. But a few people have been getting in touch saying, like, if you had to choose a kind of type out of those two, which do you think should be Arsenal's priority at this point?
I would say the OA type, to be honest. That would be my personal preference.
He can do a lot of things. So he can play like central midfield. He can play behind the striker. Apparently, he can play on the left as well. So he gives you options. He is a more naturally attacking player. I almost feel like if you've got Xhaka and Ceballos, if you add Thomas Partey to that, I'm not sure it solves your problem enormously.
Depends on the problem that you're trying to fix.
Yes. I'm thinking about connecting the midfield with the attack. I know that Ceballos does a bit of that, and I know that Partey and Xhaka do a bit of it, but it's not sort of the focus of their game, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, so much depends on what Mikel Arteta's long-term vision for his team is, doesn't it? Because maybe midfield recruitment will tell us what he wants to do ultimately with his defence. Does he want to stick with a back three? And at the moment, we feel like we need to stick with a back three because of the personnel that we have. But maybe in the long term, you know, the idea of moving to a back four gives us that extra player further forward. So, I don't know.
The other thing to consider in weighing those two, by the way, is like, as an investment, you know, Partey's 27, the old question of resale value will be there. I think his wages would be substantially more probably than what ours would be. So,
should we be worrying about that? Should we, though? I mean, I know we now...
Who do you mean by we?
I mean,
we as fans, or we as Arsenal?
We as fans, and maybe we as Arsenal. I know we try and look at transfers from every conceivable angle now. You know, to look at it not just from, okay, what will this guy bring us on the pitch, but like, what will we be able to do with this guy, you know, 3 years down the line? I recognize the long-standing and repetitive issues we have with players who get to 29, 30 years of age, you know, there or thereabouts, that we then find difficult to move on. But players, you know, between 27, 29, 30 are kind of, you know, generally in their peak years, which is when they give you their best. They've, you know, they're experienced enough and all that kind of stuff. So that balance, I mean, do I want us to sign 29-year-olds, 30-year-olds? No. Do I want us to sign 32-year-olds? Not really, but I suppose he was free. 27-year-old, you could be looking at getting, you know, 2-3, maybe more good seasons out of him if, you know, if that's what you want from the player. Like, why are you buying him? Are you buying him so you can generate transfer funds later, or are you buying him to do a job for the team that you need done right now? I mean, there's the balance.
That's true, and you can extract value from a signing in ways other than kind of residual value. You know, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, we're never going to get any money back for him, but he's been value, I would argue, in terms of his massive contribution. No one would contest that, I don't think. I think the problem for Arsenal is that this is what they sort of do a bit too much of. You know, if it was like in this summer we bought a load of 23-year-olds and we're getting Thomas Partey because he's the missing piece in the jigsaw, I'd be like, okay, yeah, that's cool. But I guess when you sit it next to signing Willian and, you know, giving an extension to David Luiz, giving potentially Aubameyang another extension, in that context,
yeah,
I worry about it more.
Sure, okay. No, I see that. I'm just sort of playing devil's advocate a bit, and as I said, I think it would be more...
An interesting debate.
Yeah, I'd be more inclined to go for Oa, to be honest. I just think, you know, again, longer term probably does more for us in an area of the pitch where we really need it, because we have been struggling for creativity in midfield. So that would be my thing. But, like, I sometimes think that when we look at transfers, maybe the balance between what the financial element of the deal might be and what the player could actually bring to us on the pitch sometimes tips too far the other way. And again, I'm not saying this is advocating for signing Partey or anything like that, but, you know, if there's some logic to doing it. I mean, Daniel Iswanda, who's on Twitter, at Daniel Iswanda, says, aren't you worried that it seems like we're the only ones going for Partey and Oa? Like, why aren't there any other teams strongly linked with Partey, for example, the way we are?
I could give you one good reason, and it might be that he has a personal agreement with Arsenal. You know, if what we are told about the story is true, that there's a release clause in place and it's a question of whether or not Arsenal play it, the chances of him not having had a conversation with the club or with representatives of the club about his terms, I'd say, are slim to none. So it may just be that it is a fait accompli. And I don't, as I say, I don't know that, but that could explain that. Another reason could be maybe the need of other clubs isn't so great in that area. I mean, Spurs wanted a central midfielder. They went out and bought the guy from Southampton, didn't they? Højbjerg. But aside from that, I'm not sure. I mean, United got Van de Beek from Ajax, who's a player that Arsenal watched really closely and looked at pretty closely, and he would have been very, very happy to come to Arsenal, Donny van de Beek, but Arsenal didn't come through with the money at the end.
How much did he go to Man United for?
40 million euros.
Right, so we don't have the money for van de Beek, but we can get more than that for Partey, is that it?
I don't know.
Isn't that the guy who was in Dawson's Creek?
Van de Beek? Yeah. I didn't watch Dawson's Creek. I don't know.
Right, there you go. I think it was. Anyway, never mind.
But again, they are quite different players in a way. I know that Thomas Partey's not a sort of pure defensive midfielder, as some people characterise him as. He's someone who can break lines with passing or with dribbling. You know, he's good on the turn. But Van de Beek, he's someone who's a bit like Aaron Ramsey. I think his real skill is running beyond the striker and getting involved in the penalty box.
Right.
Arguably, someone we could really have done with.
Yeah, okay. No, I'm just speculating on the financials of that. Like, if one thing is impossible for us, you know, is something in the same price bracket also impossible for us? Or maybe it's just a question of timing until we manage to generate some funds in order to, you know.
Yeah, or is it a question that you don't do one because you want to do the other? Or is it a question that... I mean, the thing about the Partey thing is it is a release clause. So Arsenal don't have to be in a hurry with him, really. They can say, you know, if the release clause is, what is it, 50 million euros, something like that, reportedly. They can say, right, we'll give you 30 million, and Atletico can say no. And then Arsenal can go back and say 31, and they can say no. And they can keep playing that game, effectively, until deadline day, when they're like, oh, fine. Here's the money, in theory.
In theory, yeah, but like, you know, there's a whole sort of season starting before that, and if the guy has a release clause, and you really want the guy, you know, pay the release clause, if you think he's worth it. But is he worth it? Is he worth 50 million when, you know, in 2 years' time he might be worth less?
And it is an interesting point. I mean, there aren't really, it's not like there's a long list of clubs. Even Gabriel, for example, you know, we were competing with Everton, with Napoli, talking Manchester United. You're not
Ed Woodward, what? Who are those people there?
I find it fascinating. I do feel a bit like Partey. I do feel like, although I've sort of made the argument for why it could still be on the table, it does feel like a bit of a legacy thing. I feel like that was a deal that Raul was working on. It's a deal that the scouting department were quite involved with. You know, is that still on the table to the same extent? I'm not so sure. And if you look at some of the noises that come out around it, it feels like he would obviously want the move to happen because it would be a massive uplift in his wage, and he would, you know, come to the Premier League, which I think he would really like. But is the will from Arsenal still there? I'm not so sure, because basically, well, let's do this question, because Vanek Bostanian asks, do you see Ceballos more as a Xhaka complement or a Xhaka replacement? He says, both can't run, both play deep, both have a good passing range. Danny's more mobile and press resistant. And he says, I'd like to see Danny plus a physical presence plus a more final third presence in a three-man midfield.
Well, that's a good question. Like, I'm not sure that Ceballos has the same kind of passing range as Xhaka. I think he's more of a tiki-taka player than Xhaka, if you like. Can use the ball well in tight spaces, and I think his maneuverability, or his litheness, his suppleness, James, does get him out of trouble at times, and that's something that the midfield has missed. But I don't really see them as the same kind of players. I'd be curious to see what Xhaka, Ceballos, and a more creative midfielder would look like. You know, somebody further ahead who could provide that little bit of youthful creativity and who had some legs and had some pace and who was able to make passes and maybe dribble, get between the lines, get beyond players. It feels like you might have a good platform for that player to do that if you have Ceballos behind him and Xhaka behind him, because generally, even though they do different things with the ball, they're both pretty secure in possession.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question from Vadi has a good point, and I think Ceballos could play Xhaka's role, but I sort of think my hunch is Arsenal will probably buy one more central midfield player rather than two. And that's what makes me think, well, I sort of hope that's someone with a bit more of an attacking mindset. And then this season, you're looking at a first choice trio of, like you just said, Xhaka, Ceballos and one other. In 12 months' time, you look at what Xhaka's got left on his deal, you look at his age, and maybe you think, well, if we can sell him and buy Danny Ceballos and he can take on that role, then I think that's something maybe you consider in the evolution of the team. But I think they'll play together this season, actually, like they did for the majority of the restart, but hopefully with a third more attacking component in there.
Yeah, just to go back to that question that I asked about conceding goals in games, I remember that it came from a question that I had up here from Twitter. It was from Tim the Gooner, who is at the Arsenal chat. So I don't know if that means he's good at talking or if he is a French cat. one or the other. I just don't know. Yeah, it will be interesting to see what they do with that midfield. I think it's going to be... I think it's going to be very interesting. We did, of course, have a first sighting of Willian in an Arsenal shirt.
Yeah, did you, by the way...
Go on.
On the subject of Willian, did you watch the training video that Arsenal put out?
I didn't, actually.
Okay. It's worth watching. It's interesting, because you remember, what was the game where Danny Ceballos produced a brilliant, beautiful pass that he kind of clipped into a channel for someone to run through on the right wing? Maybe it was Saka who went through. It was at the Emirates Stadium. Do you know the pass I mean? It was like a Fabregas-esque lofted through ball.
Kind of. It's all gone a bit hazy, you know, the end of last season and stuff. But
I feel like maybe it was through for Bukayo Saka and he squared it and someone scored from the right-hand side. Anyway.
Yes, I remember it now in abstract terms, but I don't remember the specifics.
Doesn't Saka do a little shuffle? And everyone was like, oh, what a lovely move from him. Do you know what I mean? Where he sort of, he faints and he... takes the defender's soul, as the kids say.
Yeah.
And squares it. What goal is that? It's for Aubameyang, I guess.
It is. It could be against... Let me see. Leicester?
We're all shouting out at home.
Leicester?
Maybe. Arsenal, Leicester, Aubameyang. Yeah, that makes sense.
Aubameyang goal, Leicester.
1-1. Here it is. Oh, I've got an advert for Now TV. For God's sake. I've got to sit through it. Well, the point being, if it is this game, Arsenal were, in this training session that was filmed, working on pretty much exactly this move.
Right.
It was really interesting. They were doing it using... it was Leicester, you were right. So it's the Ceballos ball over the top... shuffle from Saka, squares it, Aubameyang taps it.
Right.
So, they were doing pretty much exactly this move. And interestingly, it's not hugely lofted, the pass from Sparse. It just sort of skips through at about sort of chest height. But they were doing it with Mohamed Elneny, I guess because he has been playing in that kind of right-sided central midfield role in pre-season.
Right.
And they were working it out from the goalkeeper. They were going via Hector Bellerin, working the ball into Elneny, and he was lofting these passes into that channel.
Mm-hmm.
And actually racing onto it, it was either Pepe or Willian. And they were both kind of working that right channel. And then when one of them who wasn't working the right channel, one would take up a position in the centre.
Mm.
Which, you know, of course, one can read too much into who's there on the day they do training, who, you know, how you interpret things. But I did wonder, you know, is that something we're going to see? Pepe and Willian might form, you know, two parts of a slightly more attack-minded team formation midfield. Thought it was interesting.
We had a question here. I think Scott McMurdo says, at Scott McMurdo says, from the limited training pics and videos, it seems like Willian has been training on the right. Assuming he plays there, what do you think this means for Pepe and also Nelson? Because, like, the word was, you know, before Willian signed and everyone was going, well, you know, we've got Pepe playing from the right and Willian plays from the right. And, you know, we paid £72 million for Pepe and Willian is, you know, 32 now and blah, blah, yeah. And then it was, you know, there was a slew of articles which were like, well, actually, Mikel Arteta sees Willian as somebody who can play in the middle as part of his creative blah, blah, blah. So do you think that's...
Is that your impression of my voice?
No, not you. Did you write something like that? I don't remember.
I wrote that... what I wrote is that Willian prefers to play a number 10.
Yeah, see, there's a subtle distinction there, James, between what you wrote and what I was very, very, lightly mocking.
It's good to check that.
That's fine.
But I think... I mean, a lot of people have said, oh, he might move to the left, Willian, and Aubameyang play through the middle. I mean, that is possible. But Willian's not played a great deal of football from the left. He's predominantly played from the right. He does like it in the middle. Sure, who doesn't? It is going to be really interesting. I mean, the other thing to say is that we saw Pepe have probably his best Arsenal performance, I would say, ever in the FA Cup final, playing as that kind of inside right forward. I think that we might see Pepe maybe taking up slightly more central positions. Who knows? I mean, I don't think that's beyond the realms of possibility that when it ends up in that front five, you know, I think we have established we don't want Pepe to be the guy on the extreme right. We want him to be one in from that.
Yeah.
And maybe the wide guy... You know, maybe it could be Willian as the widest member of that front five, especially if you're about to sell your attacking overlapping fullback. I don't know.
So many questions.
What about that? Have we spoken about Hector Bellerin?
I don't know that we did.
No, I think it didn't. I think the times weren't quite lined up.
I spoke about it on the podcast on Friday, I'm sure. Yeah, I did. Spoke about it with Nick Ames on Friday, but obviously we haven't had a chance to talk about it. I mean, what are your thoughts on his potential departure?
Do you know what's funny?
What?
We had a conversation the previous week, and I think even I might have suggested, you know, well, Ainsley Maitland-Niles.
Yeah, you did, actually.
Right
back.
But as soon as I saw that Hector was being talked about, you know, with PSG and that, I found myself kind of second-guessing and going,
no,
is he actually ready?
No,
do you know what I mean?
Don't do it.
I think it's because I sort of think... Bellerin's one of the more experienced players at this point, and you sort of know what you're getting from him. He's a kind of known quantity, even though if he's not quite at the level he was. But, you know, I think he's shown signs he's coming back to that. I mean, Arsenal are in this weird position. They've got to sell some people, right? But they don't quite seem to have the price they want for anybody on the table. So at the moment, we're selling no one, and that's... not good, basically.
Yeah, because, you know, my understanding of our finances is what we sell, we can spend there or thereabouts. You know, it's that kind of ballpark. Maybe there's some wiggle room, you know, but without sales, I think we're going to struggle. So, yeah, I mean, if you want to sell X, Y, and Z, but people are only bidding for A and B, you're in a bit of a pickle.
Exactly.
You know, and I've seen people say, like... apologies, I know that this question might have come from the Discord, but I can't find it right in front of me. Let's see if I can just find it very quickly. James Reef on the Discord says, why are the executive team reportedly selling the low-hanging fruit, Bellerin, Maitland-Niles, Torreira, when their salaries ought to be earned by selling the likes of Kolasinac, Chambers, Mustafi, Socrates, Ozil, Guendouzi, etc.? Some of those players are genuinely surplus. And, you know, maybe that's an argument
you can
make.
The question answers itself, though, doesn't it? I mean, they're not attractive to buyers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately.
No matter how hard you try to sell, like, you know, going cheap, Kolasinac, anybody?
But he's not cheap because he's not going to take a pay cut. So,
and I saw that Arsenal were looking for like 15 million euros for him, which, you know, I think is, you know, okay. By all means, place that valuation on a player, but don't be surprised if nobody takes you up on it.
I think he's a hard player to sell because he came on a free transfer. So he's on a higher salary than you would customarily see for a player of his calibre. And I think, you know, for a buying club, that's pretty daunting. I think any situation where he leaves the club will probably see Arsenal still making a contribution to that wage for the remainder of his contract, because no one's going to take over 100% of it. But then beyond that, you know, those names, I mean, it's not easy to find buyers for those players on the salaries they're on. And I think Arsenal, I mean, maybe they knew that going in, but I think what we're actually seeing is it's bloody hard to sell off people in this squad. Yeah, you can sell, you might be able to sell Emi Martinez for 8 million or Ainsley Maitland-Niles for 15. You can do a deal you don't want to do at a price you don't want to do, but, you know, getting 30 million quid from a Ter Guendouzi, it's not easy in the current market. It doesn't feel particularly likely.
No. No, I mean, that is the big challenge. And
he was kind of, you know, we don't know all the ins and outs of what went on there, but it did feel like there was almost a decision of, there was a pretty clear decision on who was excluded from the squad at the back end of last season. And at the moment, it appears completely impossible or highly unlikely to move on those people. And so now decisions are having to be made on players who weren't in that group.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You're right. And look, I think we're going to take a little break here because we can just pick this discussion up again, because there was the presence of somebody who wasn't part of the team or the squad at the end of last season, but was back in the Villa game. We'll talk about him in a couple of moments' time because I got a question for you about that. And also, just to
it's El Nene,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is. Just to spice things up, for those of you who would like to win a mug, would you like to win a mug? We've got three mugs to give away, with thanks to our friends.
Nice mugs.
They are nice mugs. You got one. Mine hasn't arrived yet, which is a shame, but there you go. They come from playbookproducts.co.uk. Greatest Arsenal Plays mug, for example, number 14 wins number 14. It's sort of a diagram of the Aubameyang goal, Wenger ball, all that kind of stuff. So we've got three mugs to give away to our lucky listeners. All you have to do is send an email to competition@arsblog.com. competition@arsblog.com. And it would have been wise for me to think of a question, wouldn't it?
Yes. Does there need to be a question?
Is Robbie Williams
dead?
Okay, yeah. Is Robbie Williams dead? Yes or no? Is that question in poor taste? Well, I mean, he's not dead.
No, I think it's fine. Is
but what if...
There?
No, hang on. What if he dies?
Oh, what if the... And also, what if there is a conspiracy theory and he was murdered by Gary Barlow 10 years ago?
Exactly. Okay. Listen, I tell you what we don't want. We don't want to be sitting here doing the podcast one day and there's a knock on the door and you open your door and it's fucking Gary Barlow and I've got that Jason Orange cunt at my door and they're here to rub us out to stop us spreading this, spreading the truth about what happened to Robbie.
That's the last thing we want, I would say.
I would say so.
So let's have let's have another question about Robbie Williams then.
Go on.
What football team does he support?
Okay. What football team does Robbie Williams support? Send your entry to competition@arsblog.com. I'll give you the winners on Friday's Arscast. Now, though...
I can't believe that's the question. Can you believe?
Well, should we think of another question?
No. It's good. It's thematic. We were talking about it.
Yeah, it's football. People can do a quick Google.
Yeah, fine. Okay.
All right.
What football teams does Robbie Williams support?
What's your favourite Robbie Williams song?
Angels.
You've got a favourite Robbie Williams song?
Yeah. He's loving angels instead. You've got to go to the break or I'm going to sing it. And through
No!
She offers me.
We'll be right back.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog on the Arsblog Facebook page, facebook.com/thearsblog, and on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. And if you aren't and you want to get involved in our fantasy football league, you've got until Friday to sign up at patreon.com/. I am playing. Yeah, I am. I've already picked my team.
Have you?
Yep.
What have you got in it? Aubameyang.
I couldn't tell you. All I did was, my goal in this is to get the least amount of points possible.
Right.
Right. So,
okay. So you want to finish bottom?
I want to finish bottom. I want to have like almost no points. I can't figure out how I signed in with this thing. Did I sign in?
So have you just picked a team sort of at random or?
No, it was quite specific. I picked as many players as I thought would never play during the season as possible. I can't find my login for the Premier League. I don't know what email address I used. Fantasy Premier, let's see. No.
Always a fun game, this.
Yeah, not in that.
Trying to remember things like this.
Which email address is it? So, yeah. Anyway, look, if you want to get involved from the... I did it with my Gmail account. Okay. I'll have a look at that while we're talking. But, yeah, there are prizes for first, second, and third. There's, like, cash prizes and Arsenal shirts and all kinds of things to give away. So if you want to get on board, are you going to pick a team? Are you going to play? Are you going to do it?
I'm going to play. I quite like it. But my brother is really into it, like a proper... Like, you know, there's all these... There's this whole subculture of, like, people who are really, really obsessed by fantasy football, and there's sort of a lot of, you know, blogs and podcasts around it. But the degree of seriousness with which they take it is genuinely quite hilarious.
Right.
I'm trying to think. It's just very funny. Like, when things like coronavirus happened, the pandemic, there were all these fancy football accounts coming out and saying things like, listen, I know people are upset about fantasy football not happening, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's pandemic and we've got to put that to one side. And I'm like, of course you've got to put it to one side. It's fantasy football. We're in a pandemic.
It's fantasy.
It is a kind of fascinating thing. But I will play, for sure. I'll play in the Arseblog League.
Yeah, please
I'll
do.
I'll probably be one team above you.
Yeah, well, you know, that's still a glorious victory there, even though I am trying my best to finish as low as I can. I'm doing the password reactivation thing so I can, you know.
Are you actually making transfers and stuff, like, during the season to get worse players?
No, I'm just going to, like, I've picked my team. I'm not even going to look at it. I'm only going to look at the scores.
Right.
Like, I hope some of the bums that I pick don't have breakthrough seasons and become really important.
I can guarantee someone in this team is going to be, like, the breakout star.
Like, what the fuck? I got, like, 70 points. How did that happen? And some, like, left back who's captain scored a hat-trick and got an assist or whatever. So, yeah.
Anyway,
what were we talking about?
Are you getting close to seeing it? Or
No. I'll do a question while we're talking about it. I can see the Premier League is asking me to reset my password now, but we'll come back to it in due course. Anyway, the question comes from the Discord, and it's from Dog Cheese. That's a brand I haven't tried, I have to say. He says, good morning.
Is it cheese for dogs or cheese made from the
milk
of dogs?
It's a good question.
Good to know.
Cheese dog?
I think it's cheese for dogs, because isn't cheese, real cheese, quite bad for dogs?
I don't know. Our dogs like cheese. They just like cheese, yeah.
Cheese. What sort of cheese?
Is Robbie Williams dead? Can dogs eat cheese? We're answering the fucking questions, everyone.
It's the new question. While some dogs can eat cheese, and most dogs love it, it says, dogs can be intolerant of cheese.
Yeah, they can be lactose intolerant. Yeah.
Just like humans.
Yeah.
What was the question from Dog Cheese?
I've got to ask the question first. So... Yeah. He says...
Do you want me to answer it first?
No. I'll ask it. I'll ask it. While you consider, you know, where exactly the cheese is coming from. He says, Arteta consistently said Mesut Ozil didn't play last season or the end of last season for tactical reasons, which I totally understand since our strongest run of form came from playing three at the back, which Ozil doesn't fit into. If we switch to Arteta's ideal 4-2-3-1, assuming that is what his ideal is. It's not maybe a 4-3-3, but, you know, we're splitting hairs here. Can you see Ozil finally getting some playing time, at least as a sub? I know he'll never be as involved as he once was, but I'd love to see him play for us at least once more. That's, you know, a fairly high bar for the season already.
I think the listener's going to get their wish. I think they will see them as a player at least once more. I don't know. I mean, what do we make of him being involved at the weekend against Villa? Do we think that signifies anything? I guess it does. I mean, there was a period last season where, you know, there was a period where he wasn't even training. Then there was a period where he came back and he was training, but he wasn't being picked.
Mm.
Which is different to Guendouzi, I believe, who was training on his own. Ozil was training with the group, I think, but just not being used.
Mm.
I think he's going to play a minor role in the coming season. And I think football reasons are possibly part of that. But clearly, I think this goes a bit beyond football reasons, you know?
Mm. Well, I mean, it does suggest that there has been some kind of rapprochement between the two. Or, you know, the situation is... on the mend slightly. So look, I don't know that we can read anything at all into the fact that he appeared in a game that nobody saw at the weekend against Aston Villa. You know, sure. I don't think there's too much to be read into that. I mean, I suppose it's a positive that he, you know, if you're a fan of Mesut Ozil, that he is back and he's in the team and he's playing again. You know, you can read that much into it. The proof of this particular pudding will be, you know, what happens when the Premier League kicks off again. Is he going to be involved in the squad for the Premier League games? We know now that there are going to be only 7 subs available and only 3 subs are going to be allowed to be used because of the the vote that the Premier League clubs had. Yeah. So, you know, had it been a 5 from 9 situation, you could probably say with a bit more assurance that you know, he would get some playing time. My feeling on this right now, given that we have so many issues to contend with and so many things still to sort out, is to just sort of defer to Mikel Arteta's judgment on this one. He spoke about Guendouzi and he said, you know, the slate is clean, I think is kind of what he said. Again, whether that's true or not depends on how involved Guendouzi is going to be once the season begins. And I think it's the same thing with Mesut Ozil. But if we have a player who's earning that amount of money, who is not going to go anywhere or doesn't want to leave, then you can do two things. One, you can just leave him out and for the whole thing to be a cloud over your season, or you can try and find a way to use him and extract some value from his clear talent as a football player. And if Mikel Arteta feels like he can do that, the start of a season when I'm sitting here and everything is optimistic and everything is kind of, you know, we've turned over a fresh page, anything can happen, I'm open to the idea that Mesut Ozil can come in and do something for us this season. Whether that turns out to be the case or not, I don't know. But in the circumstances, do you really just keep a guy who's earning that much money out of the squad, or do you try and get something from him? What's the practical way of dealing with that situation? That's where I am with it. Like, if he plays great for us, fantastic, because when he plays really well, you know, he's an incredible talent. But if it starts becoming a problem again during the season, or we have, you know, some of the issues we've seen over the last couple of years, then, you know, people will question the judgment. But, you know, right now, let's just see what happens. That's where I am with it.
Interesting. So I have a few different thoughts. I mean, one of them is that actually, you know, the sort of weird culture war that has broken around the player, I think will be at its worst if he's sort of involved but not as involved as some people would like. I think it's better like he's in every week or he's not in the conversation. But I do think that, of course, if you've got an asset like that, it's costing you that in an area of the pitch where you need creativity, where you need personnel, you know, you shouldn't cut off your nose to spite your face. I mean, the problem is when Emery kind of rode back on Ozil and to an extent Ramsey, it cost him a lot of credibility. Do you think Arteta has enough sort of in the bank that if he does that, it won't lose him any authority?
That's a good question. That's not something I had really considered.
The difference is that Arteta's doing it from a position of success. So when Emery did it, it was kind of a move of desperation, whereas Arteta's just won the FA Cup and the Community Shield. If he hands out an olive branch at this point, he's doing so from a position of power, which I think slightly changes the dynamic.
Yeah, and of course, look, I really feel like there's a lot to this situation that we don't know. And I, you know, you can see people speculate about all kinds of reasons as to what's happened and why it's gone on. And, you know, you could read 20 different versions of why he hasn't been in the team. You know, so it just feels to me like there's a lot gone on behind the scenes, you know, that we haven't been aware of. You know, maybe if Ozil was out of line or behaved poorly or whatever it was, maybe he has apologized. And maybe Arteta's a big enough guy to sort of say, well, fair enough then. Let's get on with it. We don't know. I mean, it's just as plausible as anything else. So I don't know. But look, all I can say is that if he is involved, I hope it's positive. I hope he contributes on the pitch. And I hope that the drama and the circus that has kind of surrounded him for the last couple of years isn't a distraction during this season, because really, that is the last thing we need. That's all.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. So, from the Discord, Owen Planet Crusher asks, it is time. Hi, Andrew James. Your starting 11s for Saturday.
I think it will be
a back three?
Yeah. I think it'll be Holding, Louise and Tierney.
Yeah.
I think that's why we haven't let Holden go on loan just yet. I think maybe it's too soon for Saliba, and maybe it's too soon for Gabriel, which seems a bit of a weird thing to say regarding a £30 million signing, that it's, you know, it's maybe a bit soon. But maybe he just needs to settle in a bit. Who knows? I just feel like for an away game, Arteta will go with what he knows. Bellerin and Maitland-Niles, I think it will be... I think it will be Xhaka and Ceballos, probably.
Yeah.
And then I think it will be Aubameyang. I think it will be... This is where I'm not quite sure how fit Lacazette is. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it will be... I think it will be Nketiah, actually.
I think it could be Nketiah and it could be Saka from the right, because I feel like Pepe is only just back as well. He's only back a week. So I just wonder if these guys are quite ready physically to start the season.
And you didn't do your keeper, I noticed.
Ooh, yeah.
That is the big one, I think. You know, that's a big decision.
Yeah. Where did we have a question on this as well? Yeah, it came from Twitter from Josh, at Josh Robinson87. He said, what will the lineup be against Fulham? I'll start it off for you. Goalkeeper, Martinez. So we've done everything. I've done everything but Martinez. I think it will be Leno.
Do you? I mean,
like, if it were, and I've said this before, if it were mid-season and Leno was fit again and we were playing the next game, it becomes very, very difficult to drop Emmy. But because it's a new season and Leno is, as we discussed previously, seen as the number one choice, even if Martinez is giving them some headaches in that regard, probably headaches that they didn't expect, I just feel like, yeah, I think I would stick with Martinez, but I think it will be Leno.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. I think I would stick with Martinez. There's an argument. I mean, I think if you pick Leno for Fulham on Monday morning, you might have a transfer request on your hands. You know, if Emi's as good as his word, then he doesn't want to be number two. So there is a case of kind of like, well, you know, if what you want is to keep Martinez for the remainder of the season, you know, let him feel like he's number one, you know, playing against Fulham and see what happens if he makes a mistake.
Just keep him in the team for the first four games of the season, transfer window closes, then you bring Leno in, and then what do you have? Like an even more pissed off player because he can't leave. I'm not sure that you can do that. I mean, I think maybe there's an argument that, you know, you could put it up to Emi to say, look, you've been brilliant, but, you know, Bernd was our number one and he's been excellent since he joined, et cetera, et cetera. You still have a bit to do, you know, but here's the challenge. Here's the fight. Here's the competition for this season. You know, I can see how that you could have that conversation with him maybe, but I just feel like it'll be Leno.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? Like, no one... It's not really part of the conversation. How would Leno feel about it not being him? Do you know what I mean? And what would that do?
Yeah, that is actually something that few people have talked about.
Yeah.
Haven't they?
I don't know if it's because he's German and we're like, he's just a sort of very efficient robot man. But, like, he, you know, that wouldn't sit well, I don't think.
I mean, he would be able to recognise, of course, that he lost his place because of injury and the guy who's come in has played really well in any other position on the pitch. If, you know, if Lacazette got injured and we bring in a striker and that striker scores, you know, a goal a game or whatever it might be, regardless of his seniority or his price tag or anything else, you're keeping the guy who's in form.
Mm-hmm.
Is goalkeeper different?
Well, it is different. I mean, when that striker comes back from injury, at the very least, he's getting 20 minutes off the bench. I don't think...
Yeah, that's true.
Leno or Martinez will be getting that. Especially now we've got down to three subs, do you know what I mean? With five, they have a chance.
Yeah, maybe.
it's a really, really big decision. And, yeah, someone's going to be knocking on Mikel Arteta's door on Monday morning, not happy. So yeah, if you're asking me what I would choose, I actually would pick Martinez.
Yeah.
Based on the evidence I've seen, I would pick Martinez. But I don't think that's how they view it. Maybe okay. I'll be pretty wrong there, but we'll see.
We will see. Okay, here is a question from Andrew, the Hinkley Gooner, who's on the Discord. He says, do you think, as I do, that the delay for Aubameyang's new contract is due to him waiting for the team to be strengthened further? I believe he wants further quality coming in, and I think that's what we've committed to him. So do you think that's what the delay in the announcement of the Aubameyang contract is? He's waiting to see what we do in the transfer market to provide him with the assurance that he needs and wants as a football player, that not only can his financial situation be resolved to his happiness, his sporting ambitions can be realised at Arsenal.
I have to say, I haven't heard that. I hadn't heard that. And if I look at the timeline of events and sort of the degree of confidence that Arteta and the club more generally have had surrounding Aubameyang and his extension, that goes way back to sort of really before the transfer window even was sort of open. And I think that he will have made this decision on his own terms and thinking primarily about himself. Now, of course, being in a strong team is part of that. But, you know, those conversations, I would imagine, you know, about intentions and plans must have taken place already. They must have been part of the negotiating process. Clearly, there is a delay because I think everybody thought we'd be there by now. And the specifics of that I'm not sure on, but I don't know if I buy that it would be the transfer thing. I just think it's quite rare. It's something that is talked about a lot in football, you know, this idea that they want assurances, they're going to buy this player or spend money. I think it's just so much more often about what they're getting paid.
Yeah, well... I was talking to Andrew Allen about this, and the story is that Aubameyang is going to get paid, you know, somewhere in the region of $300,000 a week. Like, he's going to be up there with what Mesut Ozil earns.
He's going to be very well paid.
I don't know that anybody could argue with that. You know, if that's the benchmark, and Aubameyang is producing what he's producing, you know, how can you not pay him something commensurate with what the highest paid player at the club is being paid compared to what
problem we've given ourselves.
Yeah,
sure.
Compared to what he's produced, right? Part of that, though, is, you know, that's a rise of $100,000, maybe a little bit more every week, is potentially the delay in the signing of the contract a way of saving ourselves £500,000?
Maybe, but then footballers and agents are so smart with these things, it wouldn't surprise me if they said...
backdated.
Oh, you've got to backdate it to the start of this season. Yeah, I mean, that's quite common.
Yeah.
So, you know, footballers never lose money, basically. They're always very well looked after, well represented. But I think it's an interesting one. I mean, you know, hashtag announce Oba has taken over from announce Gabriel, hasn't it, at this point?
Well, I mean, this week, given the, given the week that's in the build-up to the new season, if we're looking for a bit of a boost, a bit of a feel-good factor going into the opening game of the season, it doesn't feel right now as if we're going to make any new signings before the start of the season, before Fulham, certainly not players who could be available and in the team for Fulham. So if you're looking for something to sort of give your season that little bit of a boost right before it starts, the announcement of Aubameyang's contract this week would probably, and I'm not saying I have any inside information on this at all because I don't, it just, you know, it would feel like a good time to do it.
I agree. And it would be nice, you know. It was really interesting, actually. Like, I watched the Community Shield on BT, and they were really talking, like, Aubameyang might leave. And I was like, are you sort of following the way this is being written about, spoken about, because, you know, it just felt a bit out of place. And especially with Messi now staying at Barcelona, that was giving me a little, you know, a little sort of 2 or 3% of anxiety of what, if he goes.
What if one of Messi's demands for staying at Barcelona is that they bring in Aubameyang to replace his great mate Luis Suarez, who got like turfed out. Get me a proper striker to play with.
I mean, that's the thing. In a situation like Barcelona, Messi maybe does get sort of influenced and sway and things like that. I just don't see Arteta saying to a player, oh, thank you for your feedback, I'll be implementing that immediately. I don't buy that, really. I think it's about them having a kind of shared vision of, you know, what their ambitions are and what the team wants to do, rather than any specifics.
Yeah.
So, yeah, listen, hopefully we get some good news soon. I'm still expecting it to be good news, and like you.
Yeah,
I think it could, timing wise, this would be a good time to do it. It'd be lovely to have that settled before the season starts.
Yeah, yeah. Twitter admin, come on.
What about this? We had a few sort of over-under predictions for the Premier League season to put you through. Is that all right?
Yeah, sure.
So the first one is, this is from KB on Twitter, who's at MFWB17.
Right.
They say, Aubameyang, over or under 23.5 Premier League goals.
What's the 0.5 for?
It's so that you could say under is 23.
Right.
If it was under
23 is 22.
Yeah, but if I said it's over or under 23 goals, what if you think it's 23?
But no,
there are no half goals.
Yeah, well, that's my point. If it's over or under 23, it's either 22 or 24.
But what if you think it will be 23?
I don't.
Right, let's play
okay, go
this
on, go
right
on.
Around.
No.
How many goals do you think Aubameyang will score in the Premier League?
Oh, Premier League. Oh, only for the Premier League. Okay, I'm going to go under the 23.5.
So am I. That's high, I think.
I think in all competitions, we're probably looking at 25 to 30 again. But...
yeah, and I think he'll score 20 probably in the Premier League, but if he stays fit. But 24, that feels a bit high. So Nicola Pepe, 15.5 goals plus assists.
Oh, over. And while we're on this, let's have a question. Just slot in this question here, like real pros, this. From John Redmond, who's at JR Shot who says, what is a realistic expectation for Pepe this season? He's had a sufficient stint under Arteta to know what to expect. What do you think his output in terms of numbers will be?
Yeah, good question. So you think over, bear in mind, this is the Premier League.
Yeah, so like...
15.5, so what, like 10 goals, 5 assists?
Or 10 assists, 5 goals, you know, or 7 assists and 8 goals. There are many combinations that you could put together to get to that figure, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Well, what did he do last season? Let's have a look at that for reference.
Was it 8 and 9, something like that? Not in the Premier League, but in all competitions, yeah. I know, but...
Five goals in the Premier League, 6 assists in 31 appearances. And bear in mind, they were not all starts. They were only 22 starts.
There. So I think it's realistic to expect more from him next season.
Do you know what? I'm going to say over as well. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. I think
You don't have to convince me. I think I could easily see him... yeah, I could see him doing that. Let's be a bit optimistic. He's definitely got the potential.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, when you've paid what we've paid for him, you need to be able to sort of say it's going to be a return in that bracket. I think so. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it's harsh expectations. Or unfair, rather. Okay, we've talked about this one. Mesut Ozil, 5.5 starts in the Premier League.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to say under. I think he'll have appearances, but I don't know if he'll start that many games.
Yeah, it's so hard to know now because of what we...
everything could change.
Yeah, so, you know, so much could change, or who we bring in.
Arteta played him every game when he first came in.
He did, so I'm going to go over on that one.
Okay. The team, 12.5 clean sheets, under or over?
Under.
Same.
I just don't feel like the center of our defense. Yeah, you know, this.
We don't know enough about the two players we've brought in. Do you know what I mean? And how they'll settle.
Well, I think what we know is that they're both still really young in the life of a center half, and that the guy that we have mentoring them or perhaps guiding them through games, while a fantastic personality and character, is somebody who looks to be in some decline, you know, in terms of his own performances, in David Luiz. So,
well, on the subject of him, over or under 5.5 penalties conceded?
I'm going to go under. I'm going to go under because
we've
think
got to have room to improve. Yeah, yeah, there's got to be somewhere we make a stride.
I reckon we might have learned.
And lastly, so this is the number of players in the team who will score more than 5 Premier League goals. Will it be over or under 3.5?
Over.
5 Premier League goals.
Yeah.
I think it needs to be, for sure.
It has to be, because, you know, you've got Aubameyang.
Lacazette. Nketiah, Pepe. Yeah, we should beat that,
Xhaka,
for sure. Willian.
Xhaka.
Emi Martinez.
Xhaka.
I think, okay, all right, okay. So it sounds like we think we're still going
to... Joe Willock.
It sounds like we think we're going to score more goals than last year, but still concede quite a few.
Yeah, I don't feel like... Yeah, I feel like if we make some improvement defensively, that will be good. That will be good. Mm. Okay, well, yeah, we'll wait and see how those pan out. Okay, we have one. I did the Pepe one, didn't we?
Seamlessly. Absolutely seamlessly.
Abba Saleh, who's at Abba_Saleh, says, do you think not playing any of the big six at home before Christmas is to our advantage or disadvantage?
I think it's to our advantage, I'm going to say. Hang on. What was the question? Sorry, I realised I just misunderstood the question.
Not playing any of the big six at home before Christmas.
Oh. No, I think that's to our disadvantage.
But could it be to our advantage that given these games will be happening before Christmas, you're going to be playing in the sort of sterile away environment in which fans aren't really there? Could that be an advantage to the disadvantage?
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you've got to go to Anfield, go to an empty Anfield. Definitely.
Mm.
That is actually a fair point. What I was thinking was more, it feels like we've got some real positive momentum and direction, and I kind of feel like having those home games might enable that to continue a little bit longer. But the point about fans is a good one. So I think maybe, yeah, we have to look up on that. So where do we go early doors? We go to Liverpool, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
We go to... what's great news is on Saturday, the sort of ravenous, violent atmosphere of Fulham will be, you know, absent.
Yeah, thank goodness.
No more riots in West London.
Yeah.
We go to Man City as well, don't we?
We also go to Manchester United.
October 31st. So there's probably some fans in stadiums, but not many.
Yeah, and then do we have another one? We do have, yeah, we've got Chelsea on St. Stephen's Day, Boxing Day.
Thank you.
That's okay.
Respecting my culture.
So that's our first home game against one of the big six. I think it might be slightly advantageous. Tottenham, of course, on the 5th of December as well. So... yeah, we've got 4. So who's the one?
It is good. Yeah, I like that. Hopefully by the 5th of December. Mm. I know we all want to get fans back in stadium, but I think if we could make it on the 6th of December, do you know what I mean?
That'd be fine.
That would be good.
That would be fine. Let me see.
Let's have another question. What forgot here? A few people, Roy Shachori and Noma Mabandla, both asked about Emil Smith Rowe. Noma said, do we know what the plans are for Emil Smith Rowe? Hasn't been in recent training picks, no noises of a loan or sale. And Roy said, do we think Emil Smith Rowe will play a part this season? Would be great backup on either wing and should definitely start cup games.
I'd like to see him. He had a very good loan spell, didn't he, at Huddersfield? I'd like to see him stay and get in. But then when you look at what we have, Aubameyang, Pepe, Willian, Martinelli, Saka, Nelson, you know, I think he's somebody who could play centrally as well, you know. But again, that depends on... that depends on the formation. I don't see him in a midfield two, but maybe perhaps ahead of a midfield two, he could play there for sure. But I think there are things that will come out in the wash in the next couple of weeks, you know, depending on what we can do in the transfer market. Maybe the futures of some of our young players are kind of up in the air. But, you know, I think when we've got Europa League, when we've got EFL Cup, although we're playing Leicester, aren't we? So... you know, there might only be six cup games before Christmas. Well, seven, of course, with the Leicester one. You know, that's a difficult enough game for that competition, particularly when the next weekend or that weekend we go to Liverpool. So the rotation is likely to be pretty high there. So the amount of cup football someone like Smith Rowe might get with Arsenal may not be sufficient for his needs, you know, when we talk about him developing as a player. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was potentially somebody who was loaned again.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is slightly up in the air. You know, the noises from the club were quite encouraging on him being part of the squad for next season. I think now things are a little bit less clear. And I think what happens in the transfer market in the next few weeks will determine that, because I think he's about 20 now, Smith Rowe. So he's at an age where he's going to want to play, and he needs to, you know, think about his development. He can't afford to just sort of not really be involved. If he's going to play Europa League games and cup games, I think that's probably all right. I think that's probably enough. But we might be in a position where, you know, even with the level of depth we have, he's not necessarily guaranteed that. So
yeah. I mean, that's it. What will be better for him? Like four or five starts in the Europa League, or going somewhere maybe in the Premier League, or even the Championship?
That's what he would do. Yeah. Or abroad, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Of course, yeah.
I don't think he'll go back to the Championship. I think it'll be Premier League or abroad. But listen, I would like to see a bit more of him, because actually, as good as he was at Huddersfield, you forget. I mean, he was actually pretty good for Unai Emery, wasn't he? I mean, he played a lot of Europa League football for him. Scored a few goals, made a really positive impression. So he has shown that he can do it at the first team level, kind of a little bit already. And he's just one of those players who looks very, very natural on the field and has a real knack of... I spoke to a couple of coaches about him, and they said the most amazing thing about him is his movement off the ball, the ability to find space. And they said, unusually for a guy who plays as a number 10 or a number 8, he will run beyond a striker. He loves it. He will get into the penalty box. And that's something Arsenal...
Mention that earlier on in this podcast as a quality from a player that we could very much do with?
Yeah, I did, yeah, in reference to Van der Beek. And Smith Rowe... he has that movement, and I don't know. You know, I feel like when I think of the players who were really great at that, someone like Aaron Ramsey, for example, it was kind of always in his game. You know, it's sort of kind of inherent. They sometimes just have a bit of a sixth sense for it.
Yeah,
and he appears to have that. So I would like to see more of him. I mean, Mesut Ozil coming back into the fold maybe makes that a bit less likely. These are the sorts of things, the decisions that are kind of being decided at the moment that will impact the futures of lots of different people.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, look, we're nearly at the end of this one, and I think we have to ask this particular question before we go, because, you know, it's one of the big stories since last we spoke. It comes from Negi Gunnar 85 on the Discord. He says, how funny was it to see what Alexis Sanchez said about his first training session at Manchester United, on a scale of Deeney missing a penalty against us to John Terry slipping against us? How funny was that?
It was very funny, I thought. But can I be honest? I also found it a bit frustrating because I was like, well, then why? What? Like, it sort of shows that he was mad to go in a funny kind of way. Like, it was the wrong decision. I know that he'd gone a bit off the boil for us, but I think that's sometimes a bit overplayed because he left. So, yeah, I mean, I found it funny, and the whole deal is funny, but our part in it isn't brilliant either. You know, it's not like Mkhitaryan worked out tremendously. So, you know, my joy in it is only partial.
Yeah, like, I didn't look at it and think, like, ha, 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 Alexis Sanchez. That wasn't my thing. It was like, ha, 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 Man United. That's that's where where I found the funny in it. I didn't really feel it was that funny from Alexis. Like, I don't have any real ill will towards Alexis. I thought he was brilliant for us, you know, and then he wasn't. And then, you know, I don't think as a football club we handled that situation as well as we should have or could have. You know, the idea of saying all summer long, we're not letting you go. You're going to stay. You're going to see out your contract. That's it. And then right at the end we went, oh, fuck. And then made a balls of it and, you know, made him even more unhappy than he already was. So, you know, I think we have a big part to play in that. But, you know, anything that reflects poorly on Manchester United is funny, of course. And the fact that they paid him £500,000 a week for 5 goals is hilarious. You know, a little bit of piano playing along the way as well. At the same time, though, we gave Mkhitaryan £200,000 a week and just let him go for free. You know, just to get rid of him, just to get him off the wage bill, we basically let him go for nothing. So we, from a financial perspective, don't have very much to laugh about at all.
No. So. No. But, you know, it says so much, doesn't it, that I think what Alexis Sanchez will mainly be remembered at Manchester United for is playing the piano. It was downhill from there for him.
Mm. Sure was. He should have played like a Hammond organ, perhaps, or church organ, something like
solemn.
That. Yeah, exactly. Set the tone for what's to come.
Very true.
Right. Well, look, we'll leave it there for this one. Things will start to hot up during the week, no doubt, as we get closer and closer to the start of the new season. Lots to come on the site in podcast form and written form in terms of podcasts and written things. I already said that. But previews of the season, we'll be looking ahead to what's going to happen. Hopefully, I'll be doing the traditional podcast with Ken Early from Second Captains a bit later on in the week as well. So that'll be available for you. We'll be doing some Discord stuff, so join us for that. Thanks as ever for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will catch you on the next one.
Bye bye.
You don't want to sing out with Robbie Williams again? No,
I don't think I should. No.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.